My time blocking is all around my purpose, on my relationships, around my family, around my business, you know, and every morning, of course, I have my morning routine when I get up, when I meditate, when I exercise, when I eat, when I start my day. And then in the evening, basically gratitude, look at what's happening for tomorrow so that I can manifest. And I do some amazing manifestation during my sleep. And then during the day, you know, I literally block time out, and I'm very big on measuring.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Ken Van Loo, his claim to fame is that he is the king of skyscrapers based in New Jersey, has done all sorts of crazy things from building skyscrapers to large, what do you call those, Ken? Horizontal skyscrapers. Man, you've got an amazing and colorful background that I'm excited to jump into today. There are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you very quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there? And I forgot to put in there in 90 seconds or less.
90 seconds or less. Where are you at now? And how'd you get there? So I started, believe it or not, with $10 and had to figure out after building $100,000 in debt, how I would get out of it. I was a civil engineer and I had to get into real estate. And my first project in real estate was a $17 million project with no experience and no money. And once we hit that out of the park, that led to a bunch of other projects totaling in excess of $1.3 billion, where we take them from schematic to handing over the key. And right now we're developing over 100 acres throughout the country. And we have the Global Real Estate Investment Enterprise, where we bring people to their greatness, you know, and leave them with more power, freedom, self-expression, and peace of mind. That's
unbelievable. I know before we kicked off the show, there were, and I gave you 90 seconds or less, thanks for staying inside of that. But there are a lot of things between, you know, the 100 acres you're developing around the country and building skyscrapers. I mean, walk us through just, I mean, how did you go from $10, $100K in debt and then land a $17 million project? I mean, how?
I guess I would have to tie it to my success in football. You know, I was an all-state football player in high school, but I didn't know what I want. So I created the six-year college plan. And thank God I met my wife taking calculus two for the third time in the third year. So she screwed my head on straight. But she taught me how to study. Still with her today, 38 years later. And that year, I was accepted to New Jersey Institute of Technology and started this engineering path. It was cool that I didn't have to study calculus and physics anymore, because roads and buildings and all that kind of stuff was cool to me. So, you know, I was able to, you know, graduate, you know, up there with a decent cum, but I was president of the ASC, all that kind of stuff. And I graduated and I won this site development award, and it planted this seed for development. But I didn't know much other than dad telling me, go get a degree, which I wasn't good at, and go get a job. And, you know, if you're an engineer, you'll make a good living. And, you know, sure enough, I did that. It took 6 years, but by the time, you know, I got into the engineering, I then found out it took another 4 years of experience before you actually got the license. And I had started this career in construction where, you know, I was building, I got offered this job. I was doing, working for a lawyer, doing construction claims at night, doing a master's degree at Rutgers. And some guy said, hey, you want to build a building in Poughkeepsie? Sure enough, I packed my bags, went to Poughkeepsie, built my first 32 unit project, and learned how to be a super and a project manager. And the next thing you know, the LEFRAC organization was building this waterfront property in New Jersey. I called my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. I said, I'm going to go build high rises on New Jersey waterfront. She's like, hey, you're nuts. A couple months later, I was a super on two 33-story high rises in New Jersey. And I was with LEFRAC for about a year and a half, those buildings. And this developer offered me this job to be a super. And I built a bunch of commercial buildings. And at the end of that stint, this guy said to me, you need to go to New York and work there 10 years, because once you build skyscrapers, you can go anywhere in the world and be successful, because that's like the all-star game. And once you go to the all-star game, you know, you're going to make it. So I did it. And I went to New York for 20 years and just learned as a super. My first job, I learned how to manage people in the field. That went up to managing almost, you know, 200-300 people, worked myself up the ladder as a PM, then a senior PM, then a project executive, and then went to work for a big developer. And then one day I had accumulated a lot of debt, you know, living this big life, you know, fancy suits and like everything else, buying a house you can't afford, 18% interest when I got married. It was crazy. And I looked at myself, my wife and I couldn't have kids. And we're like, you know, what are we going to do? You know, next thing you know, we were blessed with twins. you know, was like, oh, wow, now I got to create, you know, a legacy for them. And that led to my own business. And it just continued from there. But that was kind of the start, and as quick as I could say it.
Man, that's absolutely fascinating. Yeah, you're right. So you made it to the big leagues building skyscrapers. Why did you eventually get out of that?
You know, great question. You know, my dear friend, Dave Worsley, went on to build the World Trade Center. My other friend, Pete Marchetto, went on to be the president of Tishman. Bless you. And, you know, running all major companies in New York City, Don DiNardo ran Bovis over 40 projects. You know, I just had this desire to work for myself and not be in that corporate world. I was always short attention span and focused on, you know, how do I move up the ladder, and wasn't really good with, you know, I guess you could say a lot of routine structure. You know, I like to be a little more visual. So I just, you know, had it big when I was with Bovis. They were the number 3 CM company in the world. I was an executive for them. But there was a guy, Trevor Davis, who worked for Olympia York and was involved in Canary Wharf. And I had just had an opportunity to work with a guy who built Canary Wharf and built Metrotech, was in charge of Metrotech for Forest City Ratner, built Battery Park. These are two of the biggest projects in the world, Battery Park and Canary Wharf. Right. And when I heard about this guy coming to New York City who was going to build skyscrapers, I'm like, you know, I'm going to go work for him. So, you know, I jumped over and became a senior vice president for Trevor Davis. And then from there, I worked for Bruce Eichner, you know, another huge developer, did billion-dollar projects. And there I was like, you know, I could do this myself. I'm doing the work for him. Might as well give it a shot myself. My first step out was with a little small GC that I brought and created a women's business owned enterprise that built itself up to $40 million a year. And I'm like, well, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be a contractor. And that was my first step, just kind of getting my oats to kind of go out on my own, you know, because when you come from nothing and you don't have money and you're starting on a shoestring, you know, you got to build some Calhoun sometimes, you know, but you know, that's all.
Break down what you do today, because it sounds like you've got your hands in a lot of different development projects. You're doing some really cool stuff, but you also are teaching people as well the mechanics of financial freedom. Does that sound like a fair synopsis?
Yeah, it does. And it's a great question because, you know, I take time blocking to heart and I try to, you know, you want to be most effective because there's only so many hours during the day. And I'm sure, you know, with 3 kids and doing a daily podcast, our time is like our most valuable commodity. And what I do is in my global real estate investment enterprise, it's me consulting to a group 3 times a month, right? Because, you know, I can't give all my time to one-on-one coaching because I'm not a coach. I'm going to tell you what you need to do to get the result you want, right? Because that's what I did for years. I was a real estate advisor in New York City. People paid me $25,000 a month to keep their project screwed on straight. I'm not here to necessarily coach you. I have training I taught. You watch the programs. It's a lifetime program. You won't get away from me if you want to be successful in real estate. And that's a couple hours a week. You know, my real vision now, because over the years, you know, I've raised a lot of money and now, you know, I want to simplify the money raising aspect of it. I don't know how much time you raise, you know, spend raising money, but you could spend a month of Sundays and then some raising money, right? You know, I'm moving on to some, you know, I'm scaling my developments outside of New York City. New York City's an interesting cat because you could do a project and right in that little neighborhood, you could raise the money. It's just all right there, you know, but when you're doing something in, you know, Lewisburg, North Carolina, people don't know the demographics there. They don't know that Raleigh's coming that way. They don't know that there's a highway widening, right? So it's a different animal and I'm not here to pound the pavement, right? So I've actually, you know, moving in a little direction, you know, going more securitized this year and maybe less than high net worth individuals. I don't know exactly where that's going to go, but we're focused on getting a little more structure and really trying to scale on a national scale where I've been a big metropolitan area type of guy, you know? So my daily basis has, you know, I'm working on some fancy decks with someone who, you know, who does my marketing. I do a little work with someone who kind of runs my global publishing company and the enterprise to make sure all my enterprise members feel like VIPs. And I'm involved in a lot of the entitlement work. So for example, in Chester, you know, we're in the heart of a planning board approval where we're dealing with stormwater and traffic and all kinds of testimonials, same type of stuff in North Carolina. And having a professional engineer's license, that's kind of my forte. So I have the ability to kind of really push through and create what I believe is a tremendous value, you know, during the entitlement when you buy land, lock it up, create the value, and it helps you raise the money. So we're me looking at the end vision, which I kind of see, and creating the marketing aspects so I can enable people to see three-dimensional. I'm then pushing it ahead forward. Like yesterday, I had a conversation with a guy who went out and flagged my wetlands. That's a very important thing for me because my wetlands takes up my development area. And if it's more than what I'm anticipating, that means money. So yesterday, I had my fingers in a wetlands conversation. I had my weekly meeting with my team where I had a brief conversation on how's the traffic analysis going? Have we looked at spot elevations? Let's put the utilities on the plan. And then I kind of putzed around. You know, one of my hobbies is magic. So I'm always doing magic, entertaining for people and having fun. So that's a day in the life.
One of the things that you touched on that is near and dear to my heart and is an art in progress is time blocking. Talk to us about that. And what does time blocking mean to you?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I've been through, you know, every system imaginable and, you know, information retrieval is key. Morning and recently I found evening routines are critical, you know, and these little micro distinctions, you know, relative to time blocking, you know, because it all relative to, you know, what do you want to achieve in your business, in your relationship, and in your health, right? Because you need unlimited energy. And out of those three things, you know, every day I write down, you know, I call them three mission critical things, but there are three things that I really want to focus on and, you know, what I'm grateful for and, you know, what three things I definitely want to get done to make it a great day, you know? So my time blocking is all around my purpose, on my relationships, around my family, around my business, you know, and every morning, of course, I have my morning routine when I get up, when I meditate, when I exercise, when I eat, when I start my day. And then the evening, basically gratitude, look at what's happening for tomorrow so that I can manifest. And I do some amazing manifestation during my sleep. And then during the day, you know, I literally block time out and I'm very big on measuring, right? We all know that I have these things that I want to get time. So times are blocked out on my calendar. But as things jump in or as it moves, my first thing as I grade is what was the actual versus planned. And then I do two other measurements on, you know, how did my day go on a 1 to 10 personally and how did my day go on a 1 to 10 business wise? And it's purely a measurement because people have a tendency to feel they're failing when in reality they're just failing measurements, right? So if we quality quantify on a daily basis and we look at, hey, today was a 7 in my personal life because, you know, I forgot my iPod headphones at home or something, or, you know, that would have made it an 8 or, you know, 9 if I would have connected, you know, for 20 more minutes with my son, you know, or 10, or, you know, if I would have, you know, if it didn't rain when I was running, you know, would have made it a 10, you know, and little things like that, you know, I did for years. And all of a sudden it just gets anchored in your body and it becomes just part of your daily thing. And it just makes you work a lot less harder and smarter in the long run, because once again, you know, time's not going to grow. It's not going to stretch. And you're going to get more things going on in your life and your kids are going to get busier. And so that's kind of what time blocking means for me. And, you know, I have a chart that I created literally that's color coded with literally every single aspect. If you consider, I don't know if you've ever done any Tony Robbins stuff, kind of like the Wheel of Life, where, you know, there's time on here for my spirituality and there's time for my soulmate, you know, and there's date night on Friday nights and there's Sunday church and there's time at the gym. And then each one of those times get calculated into a percentage. So I could actually see the percentage I'm spending on my spirituality, the time on this percentage I'm spending with my loved ones, with my wife, how much I'm in the gym. So I'm always like looking at my wheel of life because at times, you know, a portion of your wheel gets flat. Right. You know, like all of a sudden you don't go to church for 3 weeks in a row or something or whatever it is. You don't go to the gym for 3 weeks. You feel a void in your whatever daily, you know.
That's absolutely fantastic. I've never met anyone, I don't think, that does it with a percentage analysis. Like that's a commitment. That's time blocking to a new level.
Yeah, I tell you, I've been accused of like not being able to shut it off. I mean, that's what I've had to force because, you know, when I wrote the book, you know, the Modern Wealth Building Formula, you know, I was sleeping like 3 hours a night and now I wear a sleep ring and I force myself to try to sleep 6, you know, because it's easy to try to pay it. You know, it's not easy to pay it forward. But when you have a passion that you want to pay it forward, you just don't sleep, you know, and you got to realize sleep's important because if you don't have sleep, you're not helping them, you know.
That's right. Yeah, there's unfortunately one of the things we've not yet figured out how to go without is sleep. And man, good sleep is the foundation, I have found. So that's absolutely fantastic. Tell us a little bit about your book, Ken, and then we'll jump into the final four questions.
Yeah. You know, the modern wealth building formula was, you know, an acronym, MWBF, that came about, you know, just from doing all my Tony Robbins stuff. You know, I was always taking massive action. You know, I was focused on wisdom, you know, bold leadership, and, you know, basically, you know, outside of the box thinking, you know, forward thinking, you know. And I was sitting there and in the modern wealth building formula, I didn't really know what it meant, you know, because looking back at my path, I didn't know real estate. I knew construction. And when I got into real estate, I was like, okay, I got to find, fund, and facilitate the process. So let me keep it 1, 2, 3, you know, simple, you know. And, you know, I didn't have to find real estate at first. So, you know, I went and called engineers and architects and found what I knew, because I knew that if I could do a $10 million project, I could pay myself 5% development fee, 3% CM fee, and 8% general conditions. That's a good payday, right? Even if I don't have ownership, you know. And I kept thinking about 9 ways to bill fees and, you know, what did I do on, you know, Bridgewater? How did I find that project? And I was a little unorthodox. I was all about presentation, presentation, presentation. How did I fund it? You know, I syndicated it. I did it differently. You know, I did presentations at country clubs and, you know, and I just did it a little different. And I turned into like a formula for me. You know, I started, you know, finding deals through architects and engineers, which then led me to brokers, but it was a different path. You know, I learned how to fund things through meeting some rich guys at the country club. And then I built the first facility on my own. And, you know, I had to figure out how to manage it. It was an assisted living, and I didn't know assisted living. So I brought in a hospital and, you know, I bought the $9 million project. And then I had the ability to build it because it came in over budget at 9.4. And, you know, that's how it kind of all started. Then said I should, you know, try to figure out what this is. And when I got that acronym, I started writing and what were the important things and came up with a table of contents. And then the last step was really proving it on residential, you know, so that people can look at the modern wealth building formula and go, wow, I could do real estate with no money and no experience. And it could be any type of real estate. You just have to think that, hey, it's real estate. It has to have an investment criteria. You got to find it. You got to fund it. You got to facilitate it. You know, keep it simple.
I love it. And where can we find a copy of that?
I believe on my website. I'm giving them away for free. You pay for the postage at kenvanloo.com or go to 11millionairesecrets.com. I think it will eventually offer it to you. You'll actually get an ebook probably for free because, you know, like I said, I'm not in the book and guru or course business to make money in that. I'd rather bring a bunch of people to their greatness, and they bring me so many projects. It's so much that I have to figure out how to fund it for them, right? You know, and that's a great problem to solve, because then everybody's having a good time and, you know, I get to, you know, feel good, you know, because what else is there to do other than feel good?
That's, you know? Fantastic. Ken, let's jump here into the final four questions. What is one digital tool or resource you find you can't live without?
You know, I would have to, you know, obviously say this at first, you know, it's unfortunately, I learned how to unglue it from my hand. So,
yeah, that's absolutely right. The modern day smartphone is pretty impeccable. That's fantastic. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Yeah, I think, you know, getting involved in wrong type partnerships, you know, not that I'm flagging anybody, but, you know, there are, you know, certain type of professions that just aren't good in real estate. You could see it in my 60 pitfalls to real estate investing. But yeah, just be careful and vet the people that you get in bed with, because you don't want any nightmares.
That's absolutely fantastic. And lastly, Ken, I know you gave a link for the book there, but if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, go to kenvanloo.com or 11millionairesecrets.com, and then it'll eventually lead them to a link where, believe it or not, you'll be able to talk to me direct on the phone. I do a few phone calls. I don't have a sales floor. And I'd love to hear what you're up to and where you're going and how I can reduce friction. So you can just slide on in, baby. That's it.
Sounds great. Ken, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Sam, thank you for your time.
Cool. All right, man.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.